Together, we can make your blonde, blonde. Sheer Blonde Go Blonder Collection by John Frieda lightens and brightens hair 2 full shades to give you your best blonde every day.
Hair talks. Make your statement with Sheer Blonde Go Blonder Collection, only from John Frieda.
Blog Talk Radio.
That's right. You are tuned in to Blog Talk Radio, and this is the Keith Harris Show. GN, and I'm your guy, Keith Harris. Welcome to another amazing segment. And I tell you what, today, people, it's going to be exciting. We've been waiting to talk to Pete DeLorenzo for a long time. This gentleman has lots going on. He's not just in the film industry. He is also a spokesperson for some wonderful, amazing causes. He's a musician. This guy is a man under many hats, and we cannot wait to get him on the line. So people, stay tuned. We'll be talking with Pete DeLorenzo in just a few seconds. And let's see if we can get Pete on the line here. Pete, Mr. Pete DeLorenzo, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm here with you, Keith. How are you?
How you doing, Pete? Matter of fact, you're not just here with me, Pete. You're here with the rest of the world.
Well, that's always an honor. I'm kind of getting used to it lately. I say that humbly, but yeah, dealing with a lot of people all over the globe.
I know that's right. Well, listen, first we'll start out with the proper introduction for everybody today. As I was saying earlier, listen, Pete does a lot. He does a lot in front of the cameras, behind the cameras, globally. As a matter of fact, Mr. Pete DeLorenzo is recognized. I don't want to just say internationally known, but worldwide. All right. First and foremost, let me roll out the red carpet. And he's a recognized comedian. Okay. First, recognized comedian and impressionist, which we spoke about the other day on a different show. So we'll get into that too. Screenwriter, recording artist, actor, director, producer, and humanitarian. Well deserving of an applause, as a matter of fact.
Thank you very humbly. And
listen, I know,
no red carpet needed. I'm a humble man.
Can you hear me okay?
Are we getting like a little feedback? Can you hear me all right?
No, I hear you fine. How about you?
Yeah, I'm fine. I just thought there was a little bit of feedback, but we're good. Yeah, we're good. So, I always tell people no red carpet necessary. I'm just a man that, I got to say, God is blessed with many talents, and the glory goes to him. But, the humanitarian work I do is from my heart, and I don't do it for, the notoriety or anything, but just trying to make the world a better place for everyone to live.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's something, as you say, that's a goal you wake up, from the inside out. And that's something you wake up and instill within you every day. It doesn't change according to financial status or mm-hmm. it's rainy or sunny.
Exactly. You said a mouthful right there, Keith, is that, it doesn't matter what status you're on, where you live. It matters how you live, and I'm a big part of, dealing with Hollywood, but, many of them don't know, and I've said this in many interviews, how to separate the two. The acting from real life. And the minute you let it go to your head or lose your humility, humility is the key. And, we're in the public's eye, and we're in the arts, the greatest industry there is and the toughest industry there is. So we have a loud voice, and I guess people listen. So why not make it beneficial to make our world a better place?
You know what? I totally agree. That's one thing that makes today's special, today's segment, it separates it from the others. I mean, not to take anything away, but when I do the show, Pete, one thing that I always like to do, just like you touched on, I try not to just speak about, bright lights and cameras and this, whole film set thing. But mm-hmm. I try to get more in depth with the person, just what they feel about life and what they contribute.
I got to say, you do an awesome job. You got a great show. You've had a number of great, talented guests, including my colleague Leo L. Sanderson last week. Because I haven't slept since the Civil War. you always have an explosive show, and I'm just honored to be a part of your show today, and I know we're going to have a lot to talk about. So.
Wow, yeah, so let's get started. Okay, now, how did – okay, you're – being in your music and your music as a musician and being in the film industry and a humanitarian, which one came first for you? And I ask that question because I'm trying to find. I want to let the people know which one led into the. Like, do they?
Yeah,
do
well,
they
that's a very good question. Actually, I started as a singer. You know, oftentimes I've brought this out when asked in interviews, and my mom, you know, she didn't sing professionally, but she could have. She was offered it, and she didn't want the road. She became a mother and a housewife instead. But she had a beautiful voice, and she was born in Italy, but she loved country music. And my Uncle Dave wrote for Roy Acuff, Chet Atkins, a lot of great artists. He kind of sounded a little bit like a Merle Haggard type. And, you know, I mean, I grew up living on, you know, growing up on the music of Elvis, and who was a great inspiration to me, and a lot of other Motown artists and R&B artists. And music was always a big part of my life, always in our home. And started out very young. So, yeah, by the time I graduated high school, I mean, I already had my own band. I was a lead singer. We were out doing gigs. And it wasn't until later that I actually started songwriting and producing and, you know, and got my first hit song in late 90s on the threshold, on the cuff of 2000. You know.
They all remind me of you.
They all remind me of you as, you know, my first hit song. I've got 15 new songs ready to go on a new album. You just keep writing. You know, I write, whether it's a screenplay, whether it's comedy material, or there's always a song on my shoulder, but I write from life and I write from love. And, you know, the greatest songs, the greatest movies, the greatest books, if you will, literature, the arts, all come from the gut and from the heart, you know, true life.
Wow. So you got 15. So you're still planning to release a new album coming up then?
Yeah, that's one of the things on the plate. There's a lot on the plate right now. I'm sure we'll get to cover a lot, you know. But, you know, aside from films and TV series, yeah, I've got a new album, 15 new songs, original songs, and hopefully we'll be getting into the studio. Just you know, you juggle everything around and you try to – if I'm not in my office – I'm on stage performing. If I'm not on stage, I'm on a set, you know. And if not, then I'm in a recording studio and other people's projects that I'm going to be doing. There's a lot of exciting projects that I'm going to be producing and documentaries. And Leo and I have a documentary in the works, I think he mentioned last week, with Johnny T. Nocter from Australia, amazing boxer that had a testimony and a half, which is going to rock the sports world. And the oppression and the suppression that he went through, you know.
Right. Yeah, we did. He mentioned that earlier. If you can go into it a little bit, where did the idea from this particular film come from?
Well, it's a documentary, and what we did was Johnny T. Nocter is a good friend of mine from Australia that I met through an author. You know, and she is an amazing author, Taylor Morgan, and she wrote a book called 15. Shards of Broken Glass, which was kind of loosely based on things that she experienced as a young girl. And it covers, you know, domestic violence and abuse, and it's an amazing book. So she had sent it to me electronically. I had read it, and then I gave her an endorsement, which got printed not only on the jacket, but on the inside, a dedication, which I greatly appreciated. And it was through her that she introduced me to Johnny, because he's from Australia. And he said, you know, he approached me and asked if I would do a documentary on him. And I said, well, I'd love to meet you. I says, you know, I've heard of you and I've heard some clips of some of your bouts and fights. And so he came down last year and met with Leo and I. And, you know, I pulled Leo in on the project because we're colleagues and we do a lot. We've collaborated from the time that we met. We'll probably get into that too, Leo and I, when we met. To another colleague of mine, Jose Mason, a great actor, and I've got him on my film, The Mentor, cast in my film. So it was through Jose that I met Leo, and the rest is history, and we all gelled. And I said, Leo, this is a great project. There was no script, Keith. No script, no teleprompter, no nothing. I used my journalistic and broadcasting background, which, you know, which is what you're doing now. But I used to be on the radio a lot and broadcasting and journalism. So I sat there after reading Johnny T. Nocter's well, you know, I sat there and I read all four of his books. Johnny's got four books out, and then he's working on the fifth one now, soon to be released, and that one's going to really be the capsize, because what we're going to do is, at the release of that book, that's when we plan on releasing the documentary and getting it out there, and this is going to go huge to the sports world. So that's how it all happened. We shot scenes in New York. We shot scenes in the gym. We got clips of him actually sparring. We've got clips of some of his actual fights. But I sat down, like I said, and just, you know, used my journalistic background and interviewed him, and the rest was history, you know. And,
This will touch. Sorry, it's in editing right now.
I mean, we've got a lot of editing to do on it still, but it should be ready by, you know, late spring or early summer.
And this will kind of touch on the boxers, his life, and you know, as you say, the trials.
Yeah, because you know, Keith, you know in the sports world, and I'm sure anybody that's well-versed in the sports world, that a lot of corruption goes on, you know. It goes on even here in our country. But up there, he was, this guy was like real, I mean, his life was in danger, and it still is. You know, he has to look around. Several times they tried to kill the man, you know.
Wow. And,
so
and again,
it's kind of like borderline that we're walking on eggshells saying, okay, up there, we want the man's safety, but really he needs to take asylum because, you know, his wife and his two children and his family could be threatened because they already came at him. So once he comes back here, he may not be able to return, you know. Because
you know,
up there, if it were released up there, which eventually it will be, once we release it here, it's going to go worldwide. So, you know, if he ever went back there, you never know what they're liable to try and do, you know.
Right.
But it's amazing, you know, how.
I tell you, you know, sorry to cut you. I asked you this question.
No, it's your show. You
know,
you take the lead. I'll follow.
Well, you know what? For lack of better words, you're a serious guy. And so I know we can get deep with this type of conversation. Because
could get non-serious. When I go to the stage to do my comedy, I'm not. Well, you're serious about your work, you know. You're serious about your work, but you know.
trust me, we're going to chop into the jokes. We're going to definitely get into the jokes.
We'll get a little into everything.
The issues you deal with, your voice for so many people worldwide, your voice. These are serious issues, humanitarianism and things like that. When you express a lot of these things through film and music, are you ever worrisome? Have you ever worried before, especially when you first got into this? Did you ever worry that there could be backlash from different people or things like that? Or at the time, did that at all even worry you?
Wow, that's a very profound question. You know, worry is a word that I don't like to relate to because I don't worry. I don't fear anything because I've got God, you know, strong in my faith in God. So, you know, we shouldn't have to, and I'm sure you'll concur with me, my brother, and God bless you, that we live in America, the land of the free, the home of the brave, and we stand for freedom and democracy. So backlashing, yeah, there's always going to be. And I'm not a political factor. I despise politics. It's most of it, you know, and I know, is a lot of corruption, lies back and forth. I mean, this last election, all the campaigning, it was non-presidential. Everybody throwing mud at each other and digs, and they still do. But, you know, dispensing with that, being in the public's eye, I have right in my script, and I'm going to answer it with this, because that's a very beautiful question, that, you know, right in my script for my screenplay, The Mentor, I have a scene where I'm in the park with the leading lady. And the film is loosely based on my life and career. It's not like a biography, if you will, but it's semi-biographical. And there's a scene I wrote in where I'm talking with her in a park, and I get the point across in that scene. I said, why is it that anyone that ever advocated peace and love, society saw fit to cut him off? They threw Mandela in prison, and they persecuted him. Martin Luther King, Abraham Lincoln, the Kennedys, Gandhi, our Lord Jesus Christ. I put in there as a little bit of, you know, maybe it gets a little chuckle, but it gets the irony across that they couldn't even leave King Kong alone. Okay, they had to exploit him and shoot him down from the Empire State Building. Who was he bothering? So when you look at any person that came forward, you know, black, white, yellow, red, doesn't, wonderful people that advocated peace and love, society saw fit to cut them off. Why? So the backlashing, yeah, there's always going to be people. See, but I don't have to be on a street corner picketing or protesting or holding signs or on a soapbox. But my voice, when I speak, it's just, you know, it comes from my heart and it comes from the Spirit of the Lord that, you know, it's just pure common sense.
Right.
And when I was on the phone with the delegates of the UN, and I've said this in other interviews, but not to be redundant, I put before them a metaphor. And I said, gentlemen, I says, in the scriptures and engraved on the walls of the United Nations, the fine institution here in New York City that represents every nation of the world, I said, is engraved a word, a scripture from the book of Isaiah and repeated in Philippians, all right? They shall beat their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks, neither shall they learn war anymore. I said, the very next verse says, when they say peace, peace, then comes sudden destruction. I said, why is that? Do you know why that is? And Keith, it was like dead air for, it seemed like a year. And why is that, Mr. DiLorenzo? And I said, one common word, one common denominator, the word fear. Or like you said, you know, worry. Too many people, fear is instilled in them. It's ingrained in them. The media does it, everything, all right? But there's nothing to fear, as Franklin Delano Roosevelt said. Look it in the eye. Nothing to fear but fear itself. And the scriptures, and God says, perfect, God's perfect love casts out all fear, so there's no room for fear.
Right.
But it's there. Why? And I says, you know why, gentlemen? Because from the beginning of time, it's all about money, power, and greed. And I said, I put before you that if this country has rice, all right, and that country has grain, and this country has oil, and everybody played nice and bartered and shared, there's enough to go around for everybody, and you wouldn't have need for nuclear weapons, would you?
Right.
And they said, oh, Mr. DiLorenzo, you're right. And I says, I'm not right. God is right. You think that he wants us killing each other? Of course not.
No.
And he created us in his image, and I don't care. Black, white, purple, it's not about color, it's not about nationality. There's a brother from my neighborhood, and every time he walks by, and I say to somebody, he goes, man, my brother Pete, and he gives me the bump, you know, and the high fives, and he says, I got to get a picture of you, I got to get an autograph, I keep saying that. He said, but you know what I appreciate about you? He says, you're real. And I said, well, last time I checked, I mean, I got skin about, and I put my hand right next to his, and I says, look, your skin is black, mine is white. Does that make us any different? Do we have the same needs? Food, water, shelter.
No. That's right.
I says, you cut me or cut you. I says, we're going to bleed the same. I says, so we're one. He says, I love you, man. I says, that's, I love you too. I says, and if enough people not only said it but showed it, we'd be living in a better world. So that's what I do. I go out there and I plant the seed.
Yeah. And you
but
can
the
go
backlashing,
to sleep.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, you said about backlashing. There's going to be people. You know, I actually had. And that's where I thought you were going with the question. I did get the question one time that said, don't you fear for your life that people would come at you? And I says, I don't fear about that. I said, I'm not trying to be a martyr. Okay? I says, but when I step up to the plate, I am, you know, it was Joe Franklin, my mentor, who talked about broadcasting. He was the icon of radio and television. He invented what we know today as a talk show, you know, TV and radio talk show. And that man discovered me and launched my career. He believed in me. And you know, when you go to humility, that's the key. And he always taught that. And he said that's why he took an interest in me. So you got phenomenal talent, kid. He says, he's called me kid. He said, but you got humility. He says, and that's rare.
Right. You know? Well, yeah, it's definitely, it's a marathon. It definitely is. It's, you know, the minds and just the different ways that people are and the ways people look at things today, it's not easy to change. Let me ask you, with so many great efforts that you guys put in and people, you know, you've had our leaders and people like yourself who've done this for a long time with the state. And I notice this is not so much of an easy question to answer statistically wise, but do you think people are getting, how are people receiving it? I mean, you have the people that are fighting a good fight. And they're listening well. They're doing their parts. But how? Just the state that we're in today, Pete. Do you think we're getting there? Like, what generation?
I believe it's attainable. I think that we are getting there, and we can get there, and then it'll be done in full when our Lord comes back, because He's going to be the new sheriff in town to set everything right. But in the meantime, we're all vessels of His love and peace. So, you know, it's up to people like yourself and myself and those to keep planting the good seed. And you know where it starts? It starts with our young people, Pete. You know, without the right direction, they're lost.
That's,
you know,
it,
today,
yeah.
What's being put on? I mean, the statistics that come across my desk of young people committing suicide because of bullying, or the domestic violence that's out there against women, elderly people, children. Every night on the news, somebody's getting punched in the face or beaten to the ground. And if we turn it around, and you know, Apostle Paul in the scripture said, "Repent." And if you go back to Bible times, the way our military drills, and they say about face. That's what the Roman army used to say, repent, which means turn around.
Right.
And that's all we got to do is turn it around, and collectively we can do that. We keep planning, and the way we do that is not preaching on people, not shoving it down their throat with a funnel, but putting it into action. Action speaks louder than words, and uplifting and edifying instead of demeaning and tearing down. So when we keep planting that seed and we instruct people, you know, when you go to these third world countries and when they lash out at whether you're a Muslim or this nationality, look, there's good and bad in everything. I'm Italian American and I'm not mafia, you know. That doesn't mean all Irish people, like they try to make it, are doing a religious war or heavy drinkers. That doesn't mean or any nationality you pick that they backlash or try to bring down, the American Indian, the black people, you name it. They've always been persecuted for some reason or another, but we are all equal, you know.
Yeah.
And so if we plant it as a seed of love and teach. Jesus was a teacher. He wasn't a preacher.
Mm-hmm.
He taught. He planted. That's why they called him rabbi. He was a teacher. And then the people that he spoke to were not college educated. You know, they were shepherds. They were tent makers. They were blacksmiths. You know, they were fishermen. So they didn't need PhDs to understand what he was saying.
I like the way you put that earlier when you mentioned planting the seeds. Because I think some of the issues in the differences that the arguments that we have religiously, race-wise, color-wise, these are things that have rooted from the beginning. And I say that because I take times back when 9/11 happened, for instance. I was living outside of America. I was in another country. I was in Canada, as a matter of fact, multicultural. So I had lots, or I still do have lots of friends from, Muslim nations, just a lot of different religions.
Right. And there were Muslim people inside the UN, American citizens that were killed that day.
Yeah. Right. And it was so many different emotions, because you had people from some of these other countries that were like, they felt the hurt and the pain just like the rest of us did. There were people from other countries who they felt they didn't want to see lives lost, but they were making statements like, well, in my country, this has been happening to us for years and years, and nobody cared. You know what I mean?
You can go back to any period in history and you scratch your head and say, well, where were the people? Who cared? Well, 6 million Jews were going to the oven, while the black people were made slaves during the Civil War and down south, and an American Indian run off of their own land. You know, we could go to any particular sect of people, and they were treated wrongly.
Right.
Where were the righteous ones to come along and say, whoa, hold the fort? No.
Exactly.
No.
Right.
You see?
And it makes that. Now, we'll switch off of that for a minute. Let's talk about, and correct me if I'm saying this wrong, but hyperbaric treatment. Okay, I want to talk. Let's talk about that. Hyperbaric disease? Is that what it's called?
You did your homework. No, a hyperbaric treatment is like an oxygen chamber.
Okay.
And basically, that was a young boy, Dalen, from upstate New York, that I had helped way back. He had an accident where he nearly drowned. And, oxygen don't get to the brain within 3 minutes. It's just like when you go down that third time. So he was left unattended, I guess, for a couple of seconds. And that's all it takes. And he was about 8 years old at the time when I met him. God bless him, he's a young man now and alive and well. And he's come a long way, but I get the chills when I just think about it. The story behind this, I don't know how much time we have, but I'll try and capsize
it. Go ahead.
This young man, I was notified by a colleague of mine, Carl Richards, great country artist from upstate New York, and he told me about the boy and the family. And the kid had fell in the pool. The grandmother was screaming. The neighbor jumped over the fence and saved him. But there was some damage, and he had lost his speech, no mobility. And so he was getting hyperbaric treatments where they put him like in this chamber, almost similar to not an open MRI, but a closed one where they put you, it's like a tunnel, and they put you for the chamber. You get in it and it's like an oxygen chamber, and he would have to have treatments like three times a day. And it was very, very extremely costly. So they were going to do a benefit for him. They asked me to come up and headline it with Carl. So I did that. And prior to that, I was working a venue in the near area, and right before I was doing the gig, the club in the area, Carl had invited me up on the show, and he says, look, the little boy Dalen and the family will be watching tonight. I says, okay, I'm going to try something. Years ago when I was in college, I used to do EMT work, and I used to counsel the mentally challenged in a group home. I says, it was like a side job while I was going through college. I says, I'm going to try something. And I played right to the camera, Keith. Played right to the camera, and I did a very favorite song of mine by the Oak Ridge Boys, Thank God for Kids. And I said, Dalen, this is for you. We all love you. We're praying for you. You're my little soldier. You're going to get well. And he was watching. Well, now we'll cut to where about a week or two after that, I had the gig in the same area, which was right before the benefit we were doing. And the grandparents and the mom came out with the boy. And I got to meet them in person, and he reached out and was squeezing my fingers, and he was trying to say, I love you. And they went, they freaked out. They said, oh, my God, he's never done that. So it was like therapeutic. I got through to him, because with autism or brain damage like that from an accident such as he had, you know, the oxygen didn't get, it was coming back. He identified. He remembered my face. He knew my voice. He was grabbing my finger and mouthing and trying to say, I love you. Well, we were all in tears after that. And that's a true story. It shows you how God can work.
Absolutely. And
that's
I
what it's about.
It.
It's just about not talking it, doing it, you know? And you don't do it for notoriety. You don't do it for the pats on the back. Certainly don't do it for pay. You do it because you care, you know?
Yeah.
Otherwise, don't do it.
You know, and I'm going to go to an accolade. I like how we talk about the real, you know, other things, but...
Mm-hmm.
Receiving an award from Ronald Reagan?
Yeah, I didn't even see that coming. You know, I was I've done humanitarian work all my life from the time I was young, whether it's one-on-one coming out for someone or come out for our vets, our firemen, our police officers on 9/11. I was on Ground Zero for one whole day. I was on the pile. That's one of the songs going on my album, which I didn't record at the time because it was too emotional and I didn't want to capitalize on it. But I wrote a song as I stood amongst the ruins. And but, yeah, you know... You know, the question that you're saying there is that I did not even know that was coming. I was with Healing the Children at the time as their spokesman for 2 years. And Reagan was, you know, up until that, 88 was, you know, the end of his term. And out of the blue, they present me at Kennedy Airport, where we made world history by the grace of God, brought in the world's largest air ambulance with 101 kids 2 years in a row from United States. There were kids that were helped, but mostly from other countries, Dominican Republic, New Mexico, all over. And, you know, many of them had cleft palate. Many of them had club leg. Many of them had breathing, respiratory problems. And immediately they were placed into foster care here with parents that would take care of them while they were getting medical attention unavailable to them in their own country. And they presented me with a humanitarian award from Ronald Reagan, which I mean, you know, I'd be a liar to say I'm honored, but I didn't see that coming. And it hangs proudly on my wall. And I actually, after he passed away, I wrote a letter to Nancy Reagan, and she wrote back to me, and I have that on my wall. That is truly an honor that she said that the letter I wrote her was so heartfelt it's hanging in the Reagan Library. Yeah.
Wow.
But, you know, he was a good president. You know, I got to say, Abraham Lincoln, to me, in my eyes, and Ronnie Reagan were two men of God and down to earth. You know, Reagan had a very famous quote, one nation under God or we're a nation gone under. And look around. Look at the world. It's going down the toilet because they tried to take God out of everything.
Yeah. Reagan was one of my favorite presidents, too, as a matter of fact. Yeah.
Well, you know, he came in with both. Figure of speech, Keith, he came into office with both pistols loaded, so to speak, you know. He says, you know, you're going to let those people of Iran go, or we're going to have to do what we got to do. You know, no one wants to come in there and annihilate you, but we will do what we have to do. When he said to Gorbachev, tear down that wall, you know. So he got things done, you know.
Reagan was a tough guy. Look, going back to talking about the ambulance again. So, and these were children from all different countries, and they couldn't receive the proper health.
Well, they couldn't afford it, and they couldn't get the proper health care. You know, there were people in New Mexico that would walk for miles every day to see if their Johnny or Janie could get medical attention, and they picked 50 of them to get a new face and you know, with the cleft palate and everything. These kids were stoned in the street because they were indifferent from other children. Stoned in the street. And the parents would work for a couple of dollars a day picking crops in the field and would walk for miles to see. And we did an expedition where we sent a team of doctors to Mexico. And I, by the grace of God, I was instrumental. I did two telethons 2 years in a row and raised the funds to give 50 kids, man, a new face and a new lease on life, you know?
Man, you know what? And I say that, you know, like nowadays, because even here in America, as we talked about, you know, there's the level of hard times. But sometimes
and it's here in our country. It's all over. Yeah.
Right. But, you know, sometimes I don't think people that have the freedom and the opportunities that we have, and they're bickering over such minor issues.
They my brother, I love you, man, for saying that. And I'm going to tell you why, Keith. That's heartfelt, what you just said, and I appreciate that. Because, you know, people can moan and complain. And we all, you know, there's people going through difficult times, even here in our country. But when I see, and this comes across my desk, my brother, every day, I get inundated with Skypes, inbox messages, Twitters from people begging. They think I could walk on water. I tell them I'm just a man, but I'm in your corner and I'm doing everything that God enables me and empowers me to do. And I'm going to be meeting with delegates of the UN. I'm going to be speaking at the UN. I says, and I'm praying for you every day. And there's three brothers in Africa. One was an orphan himself. His name is Moses. He's trying to build an orphanage for these children. You know, there's a lot of people that scam, but I'm face to face with these people. Maybe not literally, but Skyping with them. And I've on Christmas morning, talked to the whole village of women and children with Pastor Frederick from Africa, too, where they plant crops and they're not growing because there's no rain. Dry, cracked ground, you know. And then there's Augustus, who sent a huge package to me, asking me to see if I could mark it. Beautiful artifacts, my brother, from Africa. Handmade baskets, tote bags, dolls, jewelry that is exquisite. And I'm planning on doing an exhibit so that this can all be shown with the prices attached that he needs to get for them. And I'm also going to try and get it into the gift shop over at the UN, too, to market it for him and then send the money to them. So it's things like that. You do what you can, you know.
Right.
But every day, and people from – there's a guy, he's a Christian. He's a Christian, and he's from Pakistan. He said, I got to sleep with one eye open every day. Because if they knew or if anything like that, he says, you know, I would be beheaded, and they would do it right before my wife and children.
That's right. You know, I don't enjoy telling this story, but you know, some years back, a long time back, I was incarcerated for a short period of time, and there was a guy, again, I was outside of America. I wasn't in America. And there was a guy there who did not even I'm afraid to say the country, right? But I'll just say
Sri Lanka. Countries are very, very rough. You know, if you get locked up for something, it's like you may not get out. You know.
Well, you'll know, just saying the name Sri Lanka, and you know about these global places, so you can understand just even there how tough it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm learning a lot about. I'm getting a geography lesson every day on that. No, I mean there are countries that I get approached by. Not to interrupt you, because I want to hear that story. I mean, countries that I've never even heard of, you know, and couldn't even pronounce, and dukes and duchesses and princes and princesses. And this is every day. I mean, I'm in the middle of a work day, and I'm getting boom, 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 messages flying in, come to my country, invites, all of that. So, you know, some of these countries, it's pretty scary what goes on there, you know. But I'm talking back to you were saying about when you were there in this country.
This guy didn't want to. He was arrested. We were in the same country, and he was incarcerated. He didn't even want to get out. Six times.
Yeah, some of them feel they're better off and safer where they are. Yeah.
He didn't want to go home. He didn't want. It was that serious. He was like, they would kill him when he got there. So you know, just some of the things that go on, people don't understand how deep it gets. It's not just about you know everything is not about the politicians, just like you pointed out earlier. A lot of the problems, they're not just political problems in these countries, you know.
People are so bombarded, you know, Keith. That's again very true what you said, because they're so bombarded and slammed. It's almost like propaganda, and we never thought we would see that in our country. But the news does give a lot of misinformation. The news gives a lot of BS, you know. It perpetuates fear in people. It exaggerates. It distorts. So, you know, what we're getting maybe a portion of what's true. Some of it, none of it is true. And that incites people to walk around afraid to walk out their doors. But technically, you know, like I told the members of the UN, I said, this is no longer just on the battlefield. We walk out our door. I do a choke of my act. Hey, hun, cover me. I'm going for a loaf of bread, you know. We're not living in a third world country where in these countries it's ingrained in them. It's instilled in them from the time they're born. Here's a grenade. Go blow up that bus. And they teach them hatred. Hatred is not something that's in us. We all have the ability to do good or to do evil, to be productive or non-productive. And I've said this a million times. So, you know, when you take a child is innocent until it's taught to do wrong by its peers or by the world or by its parents. And it starts at home. So where are they learning to be a bigot, you know, or hatred or prejudice? They're learning it somewhere. You know,
they hate when people hate when I say it, but it's the truth.
I'll give you an example. I dated a nice Jewish girl. She was way back in the 90s. This was, and she was from Brooklyn, not Brooklyn, from the Bronx. And one day she turned to me. I'll make this short. And she says, you know, I hate all black people. And she used the N-word, which was very rude. But, you know, she was angry. She was angry. I could see the anger and rage in her heart and in her face. So she said, you know, and I said, well, why do you hate black people? She goes, because my sister was raped by one. And I said to her, I said, you know what? That could have been anyone. That could have been a white man. That could have been an Asian. That could have been an American Indian. That could have been any nationality or any color. I said, so, you know, you cannot blame all black people for the wrong that that man did.
And the crazy part is we are
for that. I said to her, here's where I got across her. I says, look at what Hitler did to your people. He used them as a scapegoat. And 6 million of your people died in the ovens for what? No reason at all, simply because they were Jewish.
Yeah. Emotion.
So should we go and stick all white people or all red people or all yellow people or all black people in ovens now or annihilate them? You know, and this is what's happening with the Muslim people.
And what's crazy about the world, Pete, is that, you know, we still have to sympathize with people's understanding and view of the world, because that, you know, at the same time, that's that truth that, you know, you cannot categorize people like that. And at the same time, we got to be, you know, it's hard because then you got to be sympathetic to the fact that understanding her pain too. Some people so it's like people have to be sympathetic to her feelings without and understand that, you know what, she doesn't quite understand it, and you have to understand her pain. Like,
well, she did afterwards, you know. She got the point when I gave that across to her that I think it sunk in. But, you know, some people never change. They'll carry that bitterness and hatred in their heart all their life, you know. But, you know, you're not going to go out and change someone. You got to hope that they will want to change within themselves. It's just like any kind of an addiction. If a person has a drug habit or gambling or booze or whatever, you cannot help them unless they want to help themselves. But if they let God in, if they let you in or other loved ones and people that want to help them, they can get well. They can conquer it. Can do all things, you know.
Now, I'm going to go. I like our talk.
You know, man, I go back to Shakespeare when we go to Romeo and Juliet, and what did she say? If a rose were called by any other name, would it not smell as sweet?
Man.
So, you know, when you go to a make of a car, okay? It's not about whether it's a Cadillac or a Lincoln or an Oldsmobile or a Chevy. It's like when you lift that hood, what's underneath?
Man. And
it's the heart that counts, you see?
Yeah.
The performance of the person, like the car, it's the heart, the engine.
That's right. Would it still be? Yeah, I remember that saying, kind of swish at the end. But now, let me ask you, here's another frightening, I suppose it's a frightening question. It gets scary. Why is it that this deeds and these events, you know, like the air ambulance, why are they so on the back burner? I mean, like these, you know, why do they choose to downplay these types of things? I'm just going to come out and say it like that. Like, why don't these things?
I hear you.
Yeah.
You know, it did get media attention, but we didn't do it for that reason. But there was press and media crawling all over Kennedy Airport that day. They gave us a special hangar for the plane to arrive and this and that. But, you know, I know what you're saying when you say downplay, that there ought to be more of it. And you know what it is? People are skeptical.
About that? Right. We're talking about this.
Vets. Our vets are so mistreated and forgotten and thrown to the curb. And I've visited the vet hospitals, and I've come out and entertained the vets and put a smile on their face and things like that. But, you know, I was in Philly filming a movie, and I lost count. You think, like they say in New York or Detroit, I lost count in Philly within a 5-block radius, Keith, how many people were not even sleeping on cardboard boxes. They were sleeping on the cold pavement, and a lot of them were vets. And that's a disgrace. That should not be.
It is.
When you see a homeless person, they're not all alcoholics or druggies. Some of them are displaced. Some of them are vets. Some of them have no families, you know. And what are they doing? So a lot of the monies that are collected, this goes back to the politics, are misappropriated. Other times people are skeptical because there's a lot of scam organizations out there collecting money and never giving it to the vets or other causes. But I'd rather come out one-on-one, as I've always done, and I'll raise it. I do not want to handle money, but I'll go to that stage and I'll raise it, and I'll let it go to be appropriated to where it needs to be, like I'm going to be doing, God willing, this July. Now, this was pending for a while. There's a gentleman, Ricardo, out in Brazil. And you know, like Argentina, Venezuela, Brazil, there's a lot of countries like that where the drug lords is very heavy, sex trafficking, all of that. And these little babies, kids on the streets being sex trafficked and thrown into, you know, prostitution and everything. So he had interviewed me. He wanted an interview. I did an interview with him. And make a long story short, I told him when he, you know, brought to light and told me what was going on there, I says, look, I will do a concert there. Pro bono, I don't want a dime. You get the venue, and we'll work this out. I says, and I come out there. So we were going to do it last year, and then they did the Olympics there, and there were a couple of times they switched venues. And so now the date is set for July of this year. Well, I will be going out and playing to 10,000 people, and every damn dime of that money is going to go to the cause.
Wow. That's a great cause. Wow. Now, you're going to perform. Are you going to have any? Now, I know you're going to headline possibly, but are you going to do the whole performance yourself?
Yeah, well, I'm doing the whole concert. I'll probably bring an opener with me. And, okay. You know, but the whole purpose is it's not about me. He's saying, you know, oh, well, we're going to have the press, the media here, this, that, and then, you know, you're going to be honored by, you know, this one and that. I said, no. When I get off that plane, I'm a man on a mission. I'm doing this concert, not about Pete DiLorenzo, but about your people of Brazil.
That's right.
You know, when I have to see every day children in Africa drinking out of a trough, dirty, polluted water like an animal, that breaks my heart and it grieves me, my brother. It grieves me. It literally, I sat down the other night after seeing things that came across my desk, and I felt guilty shoveling food in my mouth because I'm saying there's people on the other side of the globe that don't have a can of beans. They don't have no water. They have nothing. And when I hear people complain, I say, come here. I'll show you something, and then let me hear you complain. Okay,
yes,
let me educate you.
I do that.
And right here in this country, you know, I mean, there are a lot of people hurting, people out of jobs, things like that, sickness, all right? But, you know, when you compare to what others are going through, there's someone always worse off. So we got to be thankful for what we have and not what we don't have, and we got to all team together. And, you know, share. That's what it all comes down to, sharing, you know?
Right. Wow.
Helping each other. Yeah. A kind deed, a kind word, a kind gesture, sometimes that's all it takes, you know?
It goes such a long way. And we got other things to try to touch that we will touch before we get out of here. But I'll go back to rewind when you spoke about the vets and some of the homeless on the streets. You know, in the urban city, as I was growing up, so many homeless people I passed, and a lot of times the ones I would pass, they were always quiet. Not to say or downplay any people who went through maybe negative experiences with people on the street, but I remember so many of them that I passed when I was growing up. They usually, a lot of them didn't bother people, and I just thought about this when you said this vet situation. A lot of them they didn't bother people. They were in their own world. It's almost like they live.
I was just going to, you hit it on the head. Again, my brother, you hit the nail right on the head. Is that, you know, human nature. People get self-absorbed. They have their families. They have their problems. They have their jobs. Or they're just wrapped up in their own affairs. And time is precious. Time is so, life is short. So, you know, they get consumed and they don't realize. I can remember during Nam. Okay, we would turn on the TV and Nixon on the air and this and that. And we would all through Johnson's administration into Nixon and through Kennedy and into Nixon. And you know, people would see literal footage. That was the first time we actually saw what was going on in war on the other side of the globe. And it was like people were immune to it. Well, that's happening over there. Unless they had a kid over there, a son or a daughter serving in the military, most people would go, oh, let's just flip the channel, you know. And they don't realize that, you know, what if that fell on your doorstep?
Man.
So you hit the nail on the head when you say they're so into, you know, and not some of them it's intentional and a lot of them it's not, but it's just a fact that people get so consumed in, like, you know, their own problems that they don't stop and think, you know, maybe my neighbor, who doesn't just necessarily have to be the person that lives next door, but whether it's a coworker, a friend, a family member, whoever, that, you know, the guy up the street, you know, a phone call, a visit, a card, you know, something that, you know, and you know, there are valid reasons sometimes why you can't, but, you know, a lot of times, most of the time, people find excuses or make excuses, you know.
Right. You know, with Pete, dealing with so many serious issues, I mean, you take on, I mean, you face a lot of problems, even problems that a lot of people today walk away from. They just don't take the time to turn around and care. You do. Let me ask you this question. At the same time, you're a comedian, okay?
Yeah.
So you have to have this balance. This is what I'm saying with this. You must, again, that must be, being a comedian, you must, this that must be something you do to make other people smile.
Yeah, well, you know, that's heavy.
Because where do you find the time?
Well, you know, you make the time. I mean, what my work is a passion, and it's my livelihood. So when I go to that stage, and I've said this many times, when I go to that stage again, my performance is not about Pete DiLorenzo. I go out there and I see the kid, the mother who's got a kid homesick, or the guy who just lost his job, or the couple going through a divorce. And for that hour, you're there to make them laugh. It's a healing agent. So that's how I look at it, you know, and what a gift that God gave me to make people laugh. And, you know, anyone that's known me for probation of time know, yeah, I was the class clown in school. I made everybody laugh, and then I went into professionally. But, you know, there's the deep side of me, which is the real deep, you know, real me, that I do my acting on the stage and screen, I tell people. But, you know, this is real life that, you know, a comedian can, and I know. By God's grace, I have the balance, so I know when, you know, and we talked about 9/11, in light of 9/11, you're not going to go out there and make jokes about 9/11, like, you know, and every comedian, I think, at that point, the late talk night shows, everyone was like, you know, lights out on Broadway, wow, where do you go, how do you be funny after something like that, thousands of lives lost. But you have to see the irony in it, too, so, you know, and it was like a healing stage, so people needed to laugh, you know.
Right.
But, you know, you had to, not that you had to walk on eggs, but you had to be delicate. You know, you're not going to do things in poor taste, but, you know, like I would do jokes about the Taliban and everything, saying those people, they don't even know what day of the week it is. They wake up, hey, well, Yamir, wasn't that bomb under this rock the other day? Now it's over here, you know. <They don't> know. So, you know, you put a little humor in there. I says, you know, look at Bin Laden. I says, they say they can't find Bin Laden. I says, come on, the guy's on dialysis. He's on a camera. He's got a nose as big as the world. Right. I says, you want to find Bin Laden, just get Visa. They'll find anybody, you know. They'll track him down. Or I got two cousins in Brooklyn. I give them a tip on the horses and buy them some cannoli, and they'll walk to Afghanistan and find them, you know. So you made jokes about it, but it was in good taste, not in bad taste, you know.
Right. And, you know, because
you know, humor and laughter is reality. At least, you know, the greatest of comics deal with reality in life. And if we could laugh at ourselves, human nature, idiosyncrasies, things we say and do. I've had people in my audience, and the husband's pointing to the wives, and the wives pointing to the audience, says, yeah, that's him, that's her. So you can relate. Like when you hear a song, you can relate, you know. And it's a universal language, like music. Comedy is at least the brand of comedy that I do is reaching out to people, you know.
Wow, so many different gifts. Let's talk about the mentor, the film The Mentor for a second. You're starring in The Mentor. Now, is that already out or is that upcoming?
No, we're not even rolling. I was rolling cameras back in 98, and then I was embezzled. I was out in Pittsburgh doing a concert, and I left someone in charge on set and came back to a disaster. But, you know, I pulled it out of hiatus. My song, which launched, which is going to be the theme song for the film when it became a hit. So I kept promoting and I kept it out there and dealing with my people in Hollywood and dealing with private, you know, entrepreneurs and investors. So we're extremely close now. My associate, Mr. Joseph Rummel from Indiana, who is a wonderful man, he came behind me. That's a story in itself, too, on Facebook that I had posted about a 12-minute little video, not a trailer, but a video, kind of like a visual treatment, if you will, explaining what the film is about, what its message is about. And he was very taken by that. So he had put a comment on there like, wow, mentoring, this is what we all need. My father was my mentor, and that's how it started. And then he put, do you need more investors, the magic word. And I was like, well, yeah, if people are open-minded and serious-minded, sure. And then it went to inbox, and then it went to phone calls. And he says, you know why I came behind you? He says, because I believe in you and I believe in what you're doing and the mentoring and you're our mouthpiece for world peace. And this man has come behind me, and we have a lot of associates coming on board. So God willing, you know, we can. And you know, he's fully behind me on the humanitarian efforts as well. And, you know, I believe in Leo, bringing up Leo, that when I met him through Jose, my colleague, we kind of gelled right off. And he said, oh, man, he said, I want a marketable name like you. And I said, Leo, anyone who has credentials and credits that is marketable name is going to enhance your project. And then when I saw the script, I told him, you got to go wide with this, brother. This is not a web series. This can be like another Game of Thrones, or not to compare. I said, this is huge and can be a regular major TV series. So he cast me as the lead role. I'm playing an angel, you know, Kronos, in the series. And I don't know if you saw, if you go on YouTube, just key in, you know, official teaser for Sons of God. And you see about a 3-4 minute teaser that we did, and I helped him. So I'm producing it with him. Jose's associate producer. I'm producing it, and I'm starring in it, and when I'm get it funded and get it out there too.
And you know what?
Brilliant. He's got a Leo is very brilliant. He's a great writer. He's a great director. He was like paying me accolades, you know. He says, my God, you're intense. The camera, I mean, no matter what, once I lock into a character, I become that person. Same thing like when I'm doing impressions. So, I mean, we were working one day, you know, I helped him with locations and we were filming, and it was a windy day, you name everything going wrong, but yet I just stayed locked into character, you know.
Listen, so you're on
really good tapes.
So you're on the Sons of God cast and crew. Listen, that film. So you're part of this Ingenious and team too. I see.
Well, like I said, Leo and I collaborated. You know, I mean, he was doing a lot of shots and you know, trying to struggle through getting it to the right people and also funds to keep it going, and having a few difficulties with, you know, people's schedules and acting. And I kind of gave him insight that, look, you don't want to be a Gestapo. You don't want to have to crack a whip. But when you cast people, they have to know they're on call. And if they're professionals, you give them in advance their call day, and they're going to have to be there. Otherwise, you're going to have to. You have no other recourse but to recast them, and you don't want to have to do that when you've got great talented people. So he always appreciated my input, and he said, I want you to produce this for me. I says, well, I can get it to the right people. I said, but we got to shoot it, and we got to shoot it right. I was with him through putting the whole teaser together. We worked for a 4-minute teaser. You know, that trailer, if you will, we worked months on that, and tightening up the editing. I suggested, you know, the bumpers for the, you know, music background. And we took some good scenes and we put it together to give people just a little taste of, you know, what it's going to be.
Right. And so you're going to be, that's some new news that we pulled out here. So you'll be in Sons of God. You're going to be playing an angel.
Oh, I already am. Yeah, I've been cast as Kronos, which is the lead role. And I'm producing it with him. And, yeah, we've got some good footage shot, and we're going to be shooting a lot more scenes. Of course, you know, Leo just gave birth to a bouncing baby girl.
His
lady. So, you know, I could understand he's been busy with that. So we just got a little bit of a hiatus, but we'll resume very soon and start shooting again.
Absolutely. I tell you what.
Beard. I told him, I says, if this beard gets any longer, it's going to be like ZZ Top. I grew out a beard for the role. and had to shave it like 2 times in between for Global Cooperation Day, which we do every October 4th for Global World Peace. So I shaved it last October and then grew it back, and then I shaved it for a concert performance I was doing and then grew it back. So I said, my brother, we got to get rolling because this beard's going to be touching my knees soon.
You know what? Next, you stay busy. You've been busy. And you know what? Next time, when we do this again, we're going to have to talk about what are you eating to stay so healthy or so fit to keep up with such a schedule like you got, man? You traveling.
Well, you know, I put 48 hours into a 24-hour day by the grace of the good Lord. I don't know how the hell I do it. Drag my butt in a wheelbarrow many times. But, you know, I eat healthy, you know, and I think it's a positive mindset that when your feet touch the ground, no matter what kind of day, sometimes I get where people don't get back to you, or you're chasing people down and phone call. That's a pet peeve I have, or, you know, this or that goes wrong, and I just take a deep breath, I pull back, I say, peace be still, I lift it up to God and say, you got this, brother. You got this, my lord. You know, yeah. And I eat well. I take vitamins. I take vitamins religiously. And you know, I work out a little bit. You know, I got a bad back, but I work out every day, and half hour a day, and stay fit. You know.
You know what? I'm sorry. This is what I want to do, because we got about 4 minutes. Listen, first, mm-hmm. I want to get this out. I want you, Mr. Pete DeLorenzo, I want you to take a minute, speak to the people, and tell them or suggest to them what they could do as a person, just us as people. What can we do to become more active and creative and just coming together and making certain things better? Just your time.
Oh, that's beautiful, my brother. Yeah, that's a positive message. Well, to all your wonderful listeners, first of all, I would say, you know, when I was with Denzel Washington, I'm going to go to Denzel, who's a great actor, and I had the honor of meeting him and hanging out with him, and never worked with him yet, but I would love to. And he said, you know, every day when I wake up, at night I put my slippers deep under the bed, and when I wake up in the morning, I got to get down on my knees to go get them out from under the bed. He said, while I'm there, I thank God for another day.
Man.
And I was like, wow, that's heavy duty. And I gave him a bro hug. And I passed that off to your listeners that, you know, it shouldn't have to take getting our slippers from underneath the bed, but get down on your knees and just thank the good Lord that you're alive, you're 6 feet above the ground and not under it, and whatever hits you, whether it's finances, whether it's sickness, whatever, put it in God's hands, put your faith in the Lord, and he will see you through. And sometimes it don't happen immediately, sometimes it does. And I got that'd be another show. I could give you testimonies of miracles I've eyewitnessed. But God is good, and God can do all things. Also, think positive. Get rid of the negative. If you dwell in the past, you will never have a future. Whether it's in love, whether it's in business, whether it's in family, let go of the past, because that's a cancer. That's a parasite. Get rid of the grudges, you know, and just, like, go forward. Put it in gear and go forward. Don't look in the rearview mirror. Just look forward. I have a famous quote that when I was in Florida, I came up with. I says, the eye of a hurricane. If you were driving into eye of a hurricane, how fast would it take you to turn that car around and go the other way? So if the sun's not shining on your face, then you're facing in the wrong direction.
Oh.
Go to whoever, your loved ones, your family. Hug your dog, hug your children, you know, feed your goldfish, your neighbor, your friends, business associates, whatever. And think positive. Put a smile. It's a lot easier to smile than to frown. And it might sound easy when you're going through a lot of stuff in life. But you will be happier. You will sleep better. Your food will taste better. You're going to be healthier because of it. And you know, we all seen The Wizard of Oz. I'll leave you with this thought. We've seen it a million times. Great movie. And there was mentorship in that film. When we go to the closing scene and they get before the wizard, well, Dorothy just wanted to get back to Kansas. And the Scarecrow, he wanted a brain. And the Lion wanted courage. But the Tin Man asked for something very special, my brother Keith. He asked for a heart.
Dang.
And the wizard gave him a plastic heart with a clock in it, ticking away. And he says, well, I wonder how many people caught the message. He said, guard it well, my dear friend. For a heart can easily be broken. But be not so concerned about how much others love you. But be more concerned how much you love others.
Man, wow. And the time.
I wonder how many people got that. I wonder if they got it. But if they didn't, I'd like to share that with all your listeners. That, you know, let's not be so concerned about who's going to return the favor or the love. Just put it out there, because that's what Jesus said. No greater love could anyone show than to give your love to your brother.
That's right.
So let's, where there's despair, let's put hope. Where there's hatred, let's replace it with peace. Where there's anger and rage and doubt and distrust, let's put hope and faith. And it's done not just in word, but in action and in deed. That's it, you know.
Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, Pete DeLorenzo. Listen, Pete, we got to do this again.
Did we light up the airwaves, my brother?
Not nearly enough time. We got to do this again. Listen.
Well, to be continued, and it'd be an honor, you know, to come on again with you anytime. To all, you know, usually they say this on the red carpet at the award shows and at the Oscars, but I'd like to send a message out, regardless of what it is. If you want to be a doctor, if you want to be a lawyer, if you want to be a police peace officer, if you want to be an architect, and especially in our industry, the toughest industry there is, right? Believe. Believe it. Let no one take away your dignity, your integrity, your self-esteem, or your dream. You give up a dream inside, you die. So embrace it, and don't find the excuses, oh, why not to, or if only I had, or it could have, should have, would have. Do it. Do it. Just go out there and do it, despite the odds, because that's what my film The Mentor is about. Despite the odds, if I did it, so can you.
Just
so
do it. Hey, Pete, what are some charities do you want people to look up, or in particular some ones that you're involved in that you want people to look up? Also, your performance in Brazil, if you have the you gave the date, but give the date on that again too, where people.
I don't have the exact date, but I know it's going to be in July. I think somewhere about the middle of July, and that will be out in São Paulo and in Rio de Janeiro. Yep.
Oh, okay.
July of 2017. That's what it's set for as of now. There's a lot of shows coming up where I'm going to be, you know, doing. Yeah. I got but right now I'm concentrating on the projects. I've got two lovely ladies that are doing The Right to Live, which is about domestic violence. Jay Blayton, who is dealing with he was bullied all his life and got a beautiful book out about bullying, and I'm going to be doing a film adaptation of that. There's just a lot on the plate, but you know, and Leo and I are doing Sons of God and then The Mentor, so you know, and in between I do my shows and performances and going to be recording, and but most of all and foremost, you know, where there's a call for a need, I don't care if it's one-on-one or whatever, a child, an adult, and the elderly, a vet, anyone who's in need, you know, there's a boy, a shout out to Nico from Long Island, New York, and his mom Debbie. He has a very rare respiratory disease. I'm going to be doing a concert to raise funds for him probably, you know, maybe in April or May. So our prayers with him. He is a fighter. He's so strong, this young man. And so we're all rooting for him and all in his corner. There's so many people that are in need, you know.
Right. You know, we got to get ready to go out the, shout outs and things, but something I want to ask you to help me with, Pete, and we'll discuss this further. When I used to work at a group home, I'll be quick. I used to work at a place too for, you know, kids underage, but they have behavior issues. And
right.
I was into the industry, and I used to go to work every day, and I used to just share my gift. You know yourself, you share what you have. And so there was one thing that I always used to tell them that I wanted to do, and I didn't have the opportunity to do it then because I didn't have the platform that I have now. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What I would like to do is I would like to take one day, I want to take a kid or a couple kids, or, you know, maybe do it every so often. And I want to give them the opportunity to be a host. A radio host.
That's
you know
a
what
great
I'm saying?
Concept. Yeah, put them on your show.
Yeah, where they get to come on and just kind of host the show, or you know, ask
Absolutely.
Some questions, or do what we do. And you know, I just want to share that because that's something I can give. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, and that's how it's done, my bro. I'm proud of you, man, because that's a great thing to do. I know we're running short on time, but you know, there's a brother of mine. We call him Rev. But James Hilson, good friend of mine, he's a bass player, and that's how we met. I was on Time Warner TV, and I met him. And he used to do what you're saying you used to do, and he used to counsel these kids, you know.
Right.
And they ranged from teens up to, like, their mid to late 20s that got in trouble, you know,
right.
on the streets, gangbanging and all of that stuff. And he goes and calls me one day and says, Pete, come up and talk to the kids. And I said, well, Rev, you know, you're a good Christian man, you know, and you work in there. He was like a counselor, you know. And bottom line, I went up, entertained them a little, and when I walked in, they all snapped at attention like they were military. And thank you for taking time out of your busy day, sir. And it was like, whoa, at ease, gentlemen. And I says, the reason I'm here is talk is cheap, but I'm here because I care. And I looked out, and I saw that each one of them had talent. I says, you know, that's great artwork you're doing, and you're great with computer. And I says, not go so much as to say, I'll put you all, I don't care if you're extras on my set or grips or gophers, but you'll have an opportunity rather than to see you go back to the streets. So you see, that's
right.
it, giving them an opportunity. And I think that's a great idea you got, yeah.
Yeah, it means a
and
lot.
And I would like to extend to you if there's anything I could do to help or if you want to do like a, you know, meet them and talk with them about the industry because Leo and I were discussing that with youth that we're trying to help, you know. there in Queens, where he's from, and with Queen Mother, who's she's a dignitary, 47 years with the UN, Queen Mother. I was with her this past October at the UN, and we broadcast out live, streamed out live on Global Cooperation Day. And, you know, we're doing a lot with the young people because that's where it starts, you know.
And like you said, it's all about
action. They're our future.
Words are one thing, but we'll put it into action, and we definitely want to extend our hands out to you too to be valuable players. Again, as you say, not just people talking about it, but taking whatever resources and things that we do have and making those active. So
always say is to people, we all need to love and be loved, and we all need to hear it. But don't so much as tell me, but show me, because that's what I do with people. I prove myself to them. And you're not acting and you're not on trial. When I say prove myself, meaning that, you know, they can see loud and clear that you're real and that you're genuine, and it's by your actions. Be doers of the word rather than hearers only, you know. So put it out there and do it, you know. And when they see that, they could see that you're real.
Yeah, that's right. And even if you sometimes, and like you said, sometimes don't worry about falling. You know, don't worry about not getting, you know, don't worry about failing sometimes. Don't let that that scare.
No, you're never a failure. You're never a failure until you quit. You might hit setbacks. You might hit stumbling blocks. You might hit a wall, but doesn't mean that you can't. You go over it, under it, around it, or through it. But you will do it. And Jesus said, "You could say unto the mountain, be removed, and it shall be removed." So, amen. You know, like Stallone said, "Hey, how hard you hit? You know what I mean? Hey, how hard you hit, or how many times you get hit? It's how many times
how many get up."
Hey, I'm glad you did that. I was thinking, I'm like, man, we ain't got no impressions yet, because you're amazing. The impression, well, we hadn't talked about impressions and things like that. That was Sylvester Stallone. Who else can you do? Give us one more.
I'm up to about at least over 200 voices. I wake up in the morning, I don't know who I am anymore. I don't know. We'll throw out one of your I had the honor of working with Rodney. He was a great guy. There's so many
Rodney Williams
that I worked with. But Rodney, we did Dueling Rodneys at Dangerfields in New York. You know? And he called me up on stage, and the rest was history, because it was like Harvey Korman and Tim Conway. We couldn't even look at each other and not crack up. So we went shoulder to shoulder, and the audience was ecstatic. And, When I do him in character, I'll do like original lines that I write, or, you know, sometimes he'll do his line. But so he was doing his lines, and I'm doing lines in his voice, and we were just doing Dueling Rodneys, and it's a moment, a Kodak moment I'll never forget, you know.
Okay, I almost passed out. Listen, you know, I'm a talk show host, so I shouldn't be acting like this. But, you know, Denzel, you mentioned Denzel at first, and I'm like, whoa, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Denzel, great guy.
You performed with Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah, right on stage with him, side by side. I was an honor. I had come from a gig that I was at in the city, so oftentimes I would grab a late night set. You know, this was like, and not the early years, but like midway in my career, and you know, and I had never met him, and he was there that night. So I walked in. He's walking around a bathrobe with a drink in one hand, a cigarette in the other, and two babes on each arm, and he's like, and he knew who I was. He knew who I was.
Right.
You know, so he's like, come on, hey, DiLorenzo, you're coming up on stage with me, you know, I'll tell you. So I went on stage with him, and I'm like, hey, I'll tell you, hey, Rodney, you know how fat she was? No, how fat was she? You know, we're going back and forth. She was so fat, she had on high heels and she'd find oil, you know.
Oh, man.
She was so fat, she had on a Malcolm X jacket and a helicopter landed on her butt, you know.
You know how Rodney, I know you know how, you remember how Rodney's eyes would go back and forth, kind of,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
He had Marty Feldman buggy eyes, and he'd roll them, yeah. Yeah, you know, with the handkerchief always sweating and fixing his tie, you know, the nervous. Yeah, that was all his mannerisms, and that was his niche.
Wow.
You know? I'll tell you, that is he. I tell you, and my kid, you know, I tell you, I want to give him a smack, you know. He goes and glues worms to the sidewalk and then watches him get a hernia trying to eat them. I'll tell you.
Hey, listen, Pete, man, look, so many contributions.
We had another hour, but you know what? This was such an honor, and so many things on the plate, you know, and we just one step at a time, one day at a time.
You know what? Right. And we'll do it again. Definitely. You know, not just for the sake of a show in general, but just because of the messages, you know, and just about the important causes and platforms to use for that cause. So,
well, in the words of the late, great Joe Franklin, who was the man, like I said, who was like my Johnny Carson or my Ed Sullivan, he always used to say, it's good to be important, but it's more important to be good.
That's right. All right,
that's heavy duty.
My brother, be blessed. You take care. Listen, everybody out there all across the land, the amazing Keith DeLorenzo, right here on the show. Impressionist, actor, recording artist, screenwriter, director, producer, humanitarian, and again, I want to call him a blessing. He's a blessing to so many of us.
Well, you are a blessing too, and it was such an honor and a privilege to have this time with you on your show, and keep on rocking. You know, you've got a great show, great guests, and you're putting good out there in the world. So God bless you, my brother. And thanks to Janet. What a wonderful job she did in promoting. And she's a good assistant. Amazing. God bless her, too, and all your staff and everyone. And
Pete,
keep up the great work, my brother. To be continued.
Thank you, Pete. Pete, I'm sorry to hold you up. Shout-outs.
Mm-hmm.
Any shout-outs?
Shout-out. Yeah, well, shout-out. Oh, my God, we'd be here for another hour. Shout-out to a lot of people. But, yeah, like I said, shout-out to Nico over there in Long Island. Keep on fighting. He's a soldier. He's strong, and he's fighting to get well. Shout-out to so many countries and so many people that are trying to help. Shout-out to Joseph Rommel, my associate. Shout-out to Leo and Jose and Sammy Lee Hill out in California, and Maria in California, who's an assistant, an administrator to me that helps me a lot with global and getting out emails and things like that. And just so many people. I hope I'm not forgetting anybody, but we need another half hour to give all the thank yous to so many people that help, you know.
All right, Pete. Listen, you have a blessed day, brother, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Okay, my brother. And you got that MP3 of my song, so anytime you want to air that, God bless you. And thank you again, and thank all your wonderful listeners and your staff, and just believe
right.
And it shall be so.
All right, we're going to air that, but when you ready to leak me some of those new tracks too.
Definitely. Well, it'll be a while before the new album comes out, because we're going to be recording, so you know. But I'll definitely get you some songs that you can put in rotation or air on your show once the album's released. Or you'll come to the autographing CD release.
Man, when is that going down?
And you're going to be at the premiere of Sons of God, and you're going to be at the premiere of The Mentor, God willing, you know, and watch out at all of these events.
I'm coming. I'm there. I love all the
press and media and all the wonderful stations that I've done interviews with, and you right there on the top, my brother. We'd be honored and proud. I speak on behalf of Leo and I, and on behalf of myself for The Mentor, my whole cast and crew. We'd love to have you there. Going to do an East Coast and a West Coast premiere, you know, one in L.A. and one here in New York.
I love to be there. I have me and my staff loaded up. We'll be in the van or somewhere
there
behind.
You go.
My wife,
there you
Janet,
go.
Me and Janet.
There you go. Come out wearing your colors and your station call letters and all of that good stuff.
All right, Pete, man. We'll be talking to you soon.
All right, my brother. Peace and love. God bless you.
God bless everybody out there all across the land. Pete Day. Lorenzo, ladies and gentlemen, I tell you what, I've had a lot of conversations on this show, and I've loved them all. That conversation was in a world of its own, and I tell you why, because I just, in general, love the importance of things. A lot of people don't know. I talk about, you know, things that I talk about on the show, but there are a lot of issues and things like that that even I think about as a person. And sometimes, you know, we don't get to talk about that because people tell us not to touch on those, or don't say this because somebody's going to judge you. And then this group of people might not like you, and they won't, you know, so and so. But I enjoyed that conversation. Big shouts out and a special thanks to Pete Lorenzo, because just for going there in general, you know what I mean? Not everybody does it. People won't speak up. People won't speak out. People won't step forward. We appreciate him for doing that. All right. Once again, thanks to everybody for tuning in to the Keith Harris Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. Big shouts out to Janet Lee for holding me down as usual. Big shouts out to Leonardo Sanderson. Congratulations on the baby. Jose, what's up? Juan, everybody out there, NC, the whole USA, the whole globe, the earth, and beyond, if there's anybody out there living and breathing too. You know what I'm saying? We'll be hollering at y'all. We out.
Beauty Brand's annual hairspray event is back. Shop over 115 salon brand hairsprays and dry shampoos, starting at just $7.99.
Where to turn when styles fall flat? Sebastian Schaefer's where it's at. Try Chi or Rusk, put frizz on ice. S Factor for shine and hold how nice.
The Beauty Brand's annual hairspray event ends Saturday, April 1st. So stock up on your favorites and save up to 67%. Plus, receive a free full-size gift from Sexy Hair while supplies last. For details, visit your nearest store or shop beautybrands.com.